Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/brainstorm now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more brainstorming tools like private mode and voting. That's MIRO.com/brainstorm now.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiries.ie
on News Talk.
If you are planning what to do in the coming month, Circle Mirror Transformation, it's on in the Gate Theatre. Well worth a look. It's a meditation on theatre, life, death, and the passing of time, and all that good stuff. And starring in it, otherwise known from Après Matches, the one and only Rishtard Cooper. Rishtard, good morning.
Good morning, Anton. How are you?
I'm very good. We'll talk about the play and all of it. Can I ask you first, I'm always intrigued about your capacity to be both a serious actor and also comedian, satirist, impressionist. Did you never have to decide, right, I'm going one way or the other?
Well, I haven't so far. I mean, I don't know whether it, you know, whether it actually has been a problem for me or not behind the scenes, where, you know, a director's going, yeah, he'd be good, but I just saw him doing Miriam O'Callaghan on, you know, a sketch with Après Matches, or George Hook, where his chin was nearly hitting the table, or, you know, so I don't know whether it's has had a negative effect or not, but it seems to have been okay. Like I've always done straight theatre, and what I mean by straight theatre is, you know, not necessarily dramatic parts, although I have done dramatic parts and comedy parts in theatre. But it's something that I've always wanted to. It was my first love, basically, put it that way. And I was always mimicking people growing up. Like I used to mimic my parents' friends. They were in the classical music world. My parents were both classical musicians. They were singers. So there was usually a lot of interesting people that would come through the door. And I found myself doing impressions of their voices and copying them, copying their walk, copying the way they'd hold their head, or the way they might grunt in eccentric fashion, or the way they might sing.
To what extent did they enjoy this?
I don't know. I don't know, really. Like, they used to have, very often they'd have, you know, these kind of music parties, and I would do a turn at it from a pretty early age. And like, some of it would involve a song, and some of it would involve, you know, yeah, doing impressions or performing some kind of mad observation that I may have made. And I mean, I'm the youngest of four, so my two sisters and my brother, they were also into it. And so it just seemed like a natural thing to follow on to.
Because I'm always intrigued by that thing of doing an impression of somebody to somebody. I remember you did Pat to Pat on The Late Late. And that must be awful pressure.
Yeah, well, that I remember that one. That was, I really actually enjoyed that particular one because...
Did you?
Yeah, I did because, well, like Pat, there was something in the paper at the time, I think. I'm not sure if it's still an ongoing issue, but Pat had this issue with his neighbour and a particular part, there's a field or something outside.
Oh, that's right. You went, that's right. You did a John B thing.
I did. I suggested that it was like The Field starring Pat Kenny as the bull Kenny, and get off my land. This is my land, you goddamn punk. So yeah, I did that and passed it, moving swiftly along. So yeah, I'm not sure how comfortable he was, but I was fine.
Really? You don't have a minute? Because that's the other, like, Pat's bigger than he looks.
yeah, no, he was in good shape well at that stage. Yeah, it was... No, I mean, to be fair to Pat, he has always had a sense of humor about that. And I think some people don't. And some people definitely can get a bit irked by it. But like, to be honest with you, like, unless it's something very personal that they have a legitimate gripe with, I kind of think that's maybe just I'm doing a good job if it's something that they're kind of reacting that negatively towards. But it is always a risk. It is always something that, I mean, particularly in Ireland, because it's such a small place, and you're often going to bump into people, I suppose, that you may be doing in a sketch, or that you may have targeted in some way.
Yeah, and I suppose also it's hard to tell. You don't always know what it is that somebody will take offence at. Because I remember you used to, Apri Match did Joe Duffy in triplicate, and I don't think he ever objected to it. But when David McSavage did him, he did him as enjoying misery. And that drove Joe absolutely bananas. So it's funny, you don't always know what's the thing that's going to irk somebody.
No, absolutely. Absolutely not. I mean, I remember when we did that Joe Duffy sketch, it was more based on maybe the triviality of some of the content. And I remember myself and Gary Cook of Apri Match coming back from a gig, and we had the Joe Duffy show on, and there was something on about, you know, the rashers. There's a caller on there from Mary there from Dunshaughlin is saying that she got a packet of rashers, and the Denny rashers, I think it was, and there was only five in the packet, but the next one up has 11 rashers. So five is too few, and 11 is too many, Joe. And sure, that these are the things we're trying to get to the bottom of. And so that was sort of the beginning of us, the three of us, actually, Barry Murphy as well. Then the three of us were just walking around off air, just doing Joe Duffy impressions. And I think he liked that depiction. I think maybe McSavage might have been a bit close to the bone. I don't know.
It's not like David McSavage to be edgy.
No, indeed. No, he's normally a very calm fellow.
So this is what I mean, though, by the combination of, on the one hand, this, and the other hand, the other. Because you talked about serious theatre. You've been in some of the sort of the Jewel and the Crown. Like, obviously there's Observe the Sons of Ulster marching towards the Somme. But you were Joxer in an Abbey production of Juno and the Peacock. It is harder to find a more classically high-end role to have than that in the National Theatre.
Yeah, well, I was really delighted to get that part and be offered the part. And that was an unusual one as well, because it was a co-production between the National Theatre of Ireland, the Abbey, and the National Theatre of Great Britain. And it was directed by Howard Davies, who is no longer with us, but he was a brilliant director and had an incredible career in the UK particularly. And yeah, so Ciarán Hinds was Captain Boyle, and Sinead Cusack was Juno. And
wow,
it was a fantastic experience. It's one of those parts, one of those plays that you, as soon as you know anything about theatre, you want to be in. You just want to have some part in it. I think it's one of the best plays ever written. It's a classic.
It's funny. I've always thought, maybe I was a dilettante about it, but I always thought that O'Casey in general and Juno in particular was vastly overlooked in favor of the works of Joyce, in favor of the plays of Beckett. I always thought that was the apogee of that period of playwriting, that it was hard to find anything produced by an Irish playwright better than that.
Yeah, I agree. And it's the classic balance of a tragic comedy. And, you know, the background to it is obviously pretty grim and set in 1922 and in a Dublin tenement. But what has always been his incredible strength is the sense of humor. Like, the comedy in it is brilliant. It's high-end comedy as well. And it's almost funny because of the tragedy that underlies it. So yeah, it was a great experience to be part of that. And it was interesting in London. They were very reverential towards the play, and like the audiences were, and you know, pretty quiet. And I suppose they didn't want to feel like they were laughing at this I suppose, terrible time in Irish history that they may have played a part in, or their ancestors may have played a part in. But in Dublin, the audiences in the Abbey were so different because they were almost like doing the lines with us. I mean, there was one time I remember where Kieran has a line where he's deliberately supposed to forget the name of somebody, and who's called Bill, and this is the person that has left him all this money in a will. And Kieran says, I never knew, and the audience says, Bill! Bill would die so sudden. And so, yeah, they literally finished the line for him. So, yeah, very different, very, very, very different here. I mean, I think we probably treat that time quite differently as an audience as well. And so, yeah, it was a great experience and delighted to be part of that.
That's an interesting one that I wonder how that applies when you then go to the comedy side of things, because most of your output, I mean, I know you've done live shows, but the vast majority of your output was done to studio and to camera. What do you do in the absence of the laughs to get the timing right? Do you sort of develop a feel for it, or do you have to guess how the audience at home will react?
You mean on TV?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I suppose that's a good question, actually. I suppose we initially, like when we started doing Afro Imagine TV, it was live. So back in 1998, and it was literally, you know, Bill O'Hurley, real Bill O'Hurley, and real Bill, as we used to refer to him as, as opposed to pretend Bill, me, he would pass over to us live in studio, and we would literally be watching, and they would be watching us doing impressions of them and taking the mickey out of basically what they were just talking about. So it was a bit up in the air as to, you know, how things would work out. But I suppose once things became a bit more scripted, we did factor in maybe a laugh or two. I mean, you can't factor it in too much because people may not find, you know, funny what you find funny. But yeah, I guess there's you know, when things are a bit more scripted, it's easier to accommodate to a reaction that you'd hope to get.
How did real Bill react to you, Bill?
He was initially, I think, a little skeptical, maybe, but I think pretty quickly he was on board with it and was very encouraging, actually. I think he saw the potential in Afro Imagine being part of their output.
It was the weirdest thing. Like, it's one of those where if you said, hang on, walk me through the pitch of this again. We're going to do comedy satire of our own sports panel directly after our sports panel. The obvious answer to that is no, we're not.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't work now, that's for sure. They probably wouldn't have the budget for it now, but anyway, that's another matter. I think even describing it, you know, like the pitch for it now would be just not, no, don't understand what that is. And I think the fact that we kind of went in a side door through sport, and it was essentially an entertainment package, but the fact that we went in through the sports department, it was almost like unnoticed. So it sort of snowballed that way. But yeah, it hadn't really been done before. Like, I think it was even before fantasy football. So the idea of doing comedy and sport mixed together was a new thing. And obviously we developed it into a live show as well in Vicar Street and toured around with it. Yeah, it was obvious that we had hit on something that people were liking. So
was it annoying to see your hard work get nicked? Because one of the things I think when you do an impression, I know nothing about this, but I'm guessing from looking from the outside, is it must take a lot of work to find the person. But once you do the impression of them, you open the door to everybody else to go live and think that they can also, you know, once you find the key, yeah. Everybody now thinks, oh, well, that was obvious. Well, it bleeding wasn't. It took a lot of effort.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a good point, actually. I think that's what a lot of people do, actually, that they sort of do an impression of somebody else's impression. And it's actually, it's not really a unique take on the person. And you're right. I think particularly if somebody hasn't been done before, you've kind of been the one to unlock something that then other people jump on board with. But I guess that's just, you know, you can't be too precious about these things. It's like, I remember when we did Back to Pat, poor old Pat's getting a bit of a grilling here. But anyway, like, Pat was somebody that hadn't been done before, and I really did look at him a lot and looked at tapes. And he's probably one of maybe two or three people that I really wanted to kind of do an impression of and really nail it down. And the key into Pat Kenny was actually his physicality, his movement. And he has this sort of robotic way of addressing the camera. He certainly did when he was doing the promos for the Late Late Show. And that was sort of a key into it. But it's something that, I mean, I know I saw Connor Moore, who's a brilliant mimic, and he did Tommy Tiernan in a sketch, and I hadn't seen Tommy being done before, and he does him brilliantly. And that's, you know, so I presume, you know, other people will do his impression of Tommy Tiernan now.
You said Pat was one of two or three you really wanted to do. Who are the others?
Well, I mean, the others were probably a bit more straightforward. But Eddie O'Sullivan was somebody as well. You know, obviously, he's a former Ireland rugby coach. You know, I remember we were in the World Cup 2007. And Eddie did, in the press conference, you know, and says they've just been beaten by Argentina, you know, and knocked out of the World Cup. And he says, you know, you can't unring a bell. And I just thought, I don't know what that means, but that has unlocked something for me, you know, doing an impression of him. So if you can't unring a bell, you can't, you can't unlock a door. Well, you can if you have a key, obviously, but you know, you can't open a tin of beans with a sausage roll. There's all sorts of things you can't do. But I don't know how relevant that was to Ireland being knocked out of the World Cup was basically the message I got from it.
I promised, and it's a long time ago now that I promised it. Sorry, I got distracted with other stuff in your career. I promised I'd talk about the play, Circle Mirror Transformation. You're in the gate through until the 30th of June. It's an interesting concept. As I understand it, the base of the play is the making of a play.
It's not the making of a play, but it's a drama course that takes place over 6 weeks in this small town in Vermont, a fictional town called Shirley. And it's being led by this character played by Niamh Cusack called Marty. And she is my wife. I play James. And there's three other students, and they're all doing it for different reasons. They're all doing this course for different reasons. And so you sort of follow their progress or lack of progress maybe throughout the 6 weeks. But all these things emerge, their entanglements, their relationships, their personalities effectively emerge over this period. And some of it's very funny. A lot of these drama games are improvised or would be improvised in a normal setting. And some of ours actually are improvised as well. So every night you'd be doing a different thing. I mean, there's a structure to the scene, but within that there's improvisation. And which
Be enjoyable.
It's really enjoyable. And, you know, it's a classic ensemble piece, as in everything you do affects the other actors, and there's a ripple effect. And the cast, I have to say, I think it's the strongest cast I've ever been involved with. Marty Ray plays Schultz, and Imogen Dole and Hazel Doop play the other characters. And they're incredible. They're like a real revelation to me. I didn't know Hazel or Imogen. And I think even from just the point of view of just from an acting perspective, it's worth coming to see them, to be honest. And also the writing is really, it's really interesting, because it's not, there's nothing on the nose. There's no, it's not lecturing in any way. And it deals with a lot of different subjects in a very light way. But that doesn't mean, I don't think it's a light play. I don't think it's flimsy at all. I think it's quite deep and resonates in loads of ways. And just about the nature of, I suppose, the transient nature of life, that nothing stays the same for very long. And those drama games actually, you know, even though you might sort of, people outside the drama world might kind of dismiss them as nonsense, they actually do kind of have some deeper meaning. Also, just qualified that it's not an in-joke in any way. It's not about, you know, mad drama types who are, you know, prancing around the place. It's there is quite a lot of substance to it, but it's done with, as I say, a light touch, and it, there's a lot of comedy and there's a lot of funny. We're getting lots of laughs actually that we didn't really know we were going to get, and that's one of the things about rehearsals is that you might find something funny or think something is funny, but when you do it in front of an audience, they may not find it funny. The reverse can also happen, where they're really liking something we weren't expecting them to. But yeah, it's the reaction so far has been really positive. So happy days.
It is Circle Mirror Transformation. It's on in the gate and it's on through until the 30th of June, and starring, among others, Richard Cooper. Richard, thanks again.
Thanks, Anton. Brilliant.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiri's.ie
on News Talk.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board. In Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/brainstorm now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more brainstorming tools like private mode and voting. That's Miro.com/brainstorm now.